think I'm going to start just by reminding people again. I think Kathleen's going to do this soon. But we do have the retreat coming up in the middle of August, the 8th through the 11th of August, I believe it is. And we're going to have to hear from people soon. Now, I know Hayward is planning on coming. Caroline's planning on coming. David, I know you're trying to work it out. Michael, I'm not going to ask people to say anything right now, but it would be very helpful. I'd love to have the program take place. We do have a couple of other people coming, for sure, but we'll have to see. So that's just a reminder, and I'm sure Kathleen will follow up with you soon. Okay, so I'm waiting. I'm testing here to see about the sound. Seems fine. Okay. Well, that's the only practical business, unless anybody has any questions along those lines. No? Okay. Then we'll move on. So we're finishing up the chapter today. We have one more chapter left in this program, which we will read over the following 2 weeks. The material that we're talking about today strikes me as challenging material. It's really going to the nature of what it is that we can talk about. You know, what is it? When we're talking about something, are we talking about the nature of the thing, or are we talking about how we experience the thing, or are we talking about the name that we give to the thing? And all of those questions really have to do with time. I mean, they're being applied in the case of time. So the things that we have to say about time in this reading, in the material we're going over today, are right at the edge, it seems to me, of what it is we can talk about. And one of the questions that's asked is, can we even talk about? So we shall see. I think that if we go carefully, it'll work fine. Now, we're still getting some feedback. That's why I've been hesitating a little. I can't do it because I didn't sign in as the host. But Brigitte, since you've been, I know you only hear birds, but could you try muting yourself? Yeah. Okay, I just seem, well, let's see, you haven't muted yourself yet, have you? Okay, if Brigitte, okay, we'll just go on like this. We have a little background noise, and I think it's coming from somebody's connection. But I also think it's possible to get along okay for you to hear me. If that's not the case, let me know. Okay, David thinks it's coming from Hayward, and that might be the case also. He's also online. Right now it's not coming from anybody. Well, Hayward is muted, so maybe that's the story. Maybe we're okay. Okay, so The point that's made at the beginning of the reading, and I talked about this a little in the orientation, is that when we conduct the events of our lives, when we conduct the story of our lives, we are also conducting. Or another way to say it is that we're conducting time. And the first question that I wanted to really raise or make sure we're clear about, and this, as I said, it goes to the question of what's the relationship between how we understand something and the reality of something, which is a rather sophisticated question to be asking. So when we conduct time, which is what it says at the bottom of page 125, are we conducting our own understanding of time? And the answer to that in one way is yes. So let's just pursue that out for a moment. When we conduct events, we're conducting the way that we respond to the events. we're conducting the way that we shape the events, the names that we give to the events. As it says at the bottom of page 125, we're conducting a story. Let's look at the top of 126. We're conducting into being a time that supports and gives substance to the telling of stories. So what we're conducting is how we understand what's happening. And in that sense, it's very important to see that what we conduct is our particular understanding. And, you know, even more important than that is that when we conduct experience, once you think about things that way, that we're conducting experience into being or conducting our lives or conducting the events that occur, you can no longer really make a distinction between our understanding and the reality of what it is that we understand. Because what we understand is the reality that we have to work with. You know, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to talk about some reality that's more fundamental or more basic than what we understand. So this is a notion that gets talked a lot about in Western philosophy. It gets talked about in Buddhist philosophy. But, of course, one of the things about the TSK approach is that these are not just philosophical points, and it can sound, especially in Western philosophy, it can sound as though they are. They're not. They're the truth of what's going on for us. So in this moment right now, maybe you can try to get a sense of that. In this moment right now, we are conducting into being an understanding of reality. And there isn't anything beyond that understanding points to. There isn't any distinction between the interpret, you know, the thing itself and the way we interpret that thing. So that's, you know, you could say it's all the story, or you could say it's all part of the world that we conduct into being. It's not. There's no, you know, we're so used to making a distinction between what's real and then my understanding of what's real. But in terms of the world we conduct into being, the story we conduct into being, there isn't that distinction. Reality doesn't have some separate status. So I think I'm maybe, you know, I feel like I'm repeating myself, so I won't try to say it anymore. We only conduct, in that sense, our understanding of time. But because there isn't any distinction, it's also true that we're conducting time. So we've got a little noise here. I think it's probably Brigitte. So, again, Brigitte, if you could mute yourself.
Okay.
Let's see. Well, it hasn't happened yet. Okay. Well, we'll see. Right now it's fine again. Well, not quite. Okay. So we're talking about the fact that we're conducting an understanding of time, but you really can't make the distinction. You can't say that we are not, we have to also say we're conducting time. Sudaba asks a question about that. Just knowing this fact that it's our limited conducting helps big time to be humbled. Yeah, I think you could call it big time. Okay. I hate to do this, but Brigitte, you haven't muted yourself yet, but I think that's where the noise is coming from. If you could do that, it would be great. Yeah. Okay. No. Okay. Well, I'm just going to keep on. We can't worry about these technicalities so much. Let me me just try. Yeah, I can't do it. Okay. So here's the distinction. On the one hand, our understanding of time. On the other hand, time itself. Okay. Brigitte, you say you've muted yourself, but you haven't. So I don't know what's going on there.
She mutes herself, and then it comes back on.
Uh-huh.
3 seconds later.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure why.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. If I were the host, I could do it, but I'm not, so I can't. Okay. We'll just go with what we have. Okay. So I'm sorry. We're kind of going around in circles here about this question of the relationship between our understanding of time and time itself. So what we're conducting when we conduct is our understanding, but it is also our understanding is the time that we have available to us. There isn't anything else. There isn't anything that's more real than the story. The very notion of something being real is a part of the story. This is a kind of a big and important point. Okay, Brigitte, I see your note. We'll just work with what we have. I don't quite know why you're not muted. Okay. Yeah. Brigitte, Michael says, Brigitte is the piccolo in the symphony Jack is conducting. Well, we'll see. Okay. I think we need to move beyond that point. So let me just summarize it. There's a line on page 126, I think it is, that talks about conducting. It's about 6-7 lines down. It says, the dynamic that makes it possible for appearance to take form is actually a part of what appears. Now Brigitte's muted. Thank you, Brigitte. And I'm sorry that there's a problem there. The dynamic is actually a part of what appears. Conducting. Creating the conditions necessary for its own operation. So this is a kind of a paradoxical thing. The conducting conducts the possibility of conducting. You might say, well, how can that possibly be? That doesn't make sense logically. But that's, you could say, because the logic that makes it confusing is also a part of what's conducted. We're kind of caught in this place of conducting. And I really want to get off this point because the only place it leads us, if we think about it, is toward a kind of a confusion. The point really is to be able to conduct differently. And we can't conduct differently as long as we're conducting, this is obvious, as long as we're conducting the way that we're conducting. We can't conduct differently as long as we're relying on a story in which something is being conducted. Maybe we could conduct differently, but if we did, it wouldn't be conducting anymore. It would be something different. So that's what the text says, but it's very interesting. The reading says this at the bottom of page 127, but when it says it, it changes the metaphor. It no longer talks about conducting. It talks about constructing, and we'll say more about that later. But at the bottom of 127, it says, the last paragraph, since knowledge itself is shaped and confined by the structures of the temporal order, in other words, the order that we've conducted into being, those structures cannot ordinarily be called into question. Yet this limitation is not inherent in knowledge itself. And then it says, once the temporal order is identified as a construct, it can, in principle, be differently constructed. So now something interesting has happened. We've moved from conducting to constructing. Right? And I want to go into that more in a few minutes, but right now I just want to point out that there really is a shift. And the very fact that we shift suggests that, you know, we can't conduct a different way of conducting. We can only conduct conducting. But we don't have to be limited by that. And I'll go back to the point that Sudhi made a few minutes ago in the chat section. Once we recognize that, then there is a possibility of doing it differently. So the thing we need to be careful of at the outset is not to think that the right move is to stop or go beneath conducting to something that's more real than conducting. That's the natural move to make. You know, it's like when we say, oh, well, that's just your interpretation, but that's not what really is going on. You can't make that move because the very idea of really going on is also a part of the conducting. It goes to the question, it goes to the issue that we had last week when we talked about the possibility of conducting differently. I don't think that was quite the language we used, but that was the sense of it. And it's very, you know, there's no obvious way to do it. Or there's not even, maybe I should just say there's no way to do it. As long as we stay within the notion of conducting. And if we say, well, there's something more fundamental than conducting, that still isn't going to work because that's still something that we're conducting into being. So the move has to be to awaken a different kind of knowledge. And the different kind of knowledge has to do with recognizing that conducting conducts conducting, recognizing what it is that's going on, because that recognition doesn't take us somewhere else, doesn't presuppose anything different, but it does open up a new possibility. Sudhi says, okay, it seems, okay, a couple of comments here, good. So Sudhi says, it seems our guide is cluing us in, showing us that trusting in being present completely can start the process of conducting in a conscious way. If I've got you right there, Sudhi. We're going to look at that in a moment because the place that we've looked so far really has to do with turning inward. And, you know, we've talked about two things really so far that seem like they might not be limited by this image of conducting time. One is turning time inward or turning inward. Yeah, turning time. Let me say that. Turning time inward, okay. And the other is turning to the aliveness of time. And those two things are both related to each other, and they do both seem to offer the possibility of something different happening, and we want to look at it, and we will in just a couple of minutes. Let's take a look at what Michael says. Construction seems more inflexible than conduction or conducting, right? Like the distinction between a building and the activities conducted within it. I think that's right. I want to postpone that discussion for a little bit, but it does seem like constructing is more solid. And the way that I think about it is if you think about constructing something solid like a bridge or a building, you have a product that you're creating. Whereas if you think about conducting a piece of music, the music only exists while you're conducting it. When there's no more conducting, there's no more music. Of course, nowadays we can make music into an object and have CDs and so on, but I'm talking about live performance here. The conducting is the happening, and there's no thing that comes out of it. Whereas when you construct something, there is a thing. It is more rigid and more inflexible. So I think that's absolutely right, Michael. We'll look at that a bit more later. I want to stay right now. I want to look at this other possibility. what Rinpoche says, he makes the switch from conducting to constructing. Maybe in the end, constructing turns out not to be the best image, but at least it's a switch. You know, once the temporal order is identified as a construct, it can in principle be differently constructed. And just looking ahead, the next section in the chapter is called Constructing the Bridge of Time. Right? So we want to look and see how that happens. But what's more fundamental is whether you're talking about conducting or constructing, the very possibility that a different that a different option is available, that's already knowledge. Not making the different option, not creating the different option, but the fact that it is an option, that you're only, you know, that you see conducting, that you see that we conduct conducting, frees you from a commitment to conduct. A very fundamental principle in all of the TSK, all of the TSK books. So we want to look at the couple of things that we've looked at so far, the inward, turning inward, turning time inward, and the aliveness of time. And neither of those has to do with trying to go below conducting or beneath conducting. They don't even have to do with constructing something different. They have to do with finding, you might say, a different dimension. But before we turn to that, and I want to look at that and just, you know, I'm sort of piling up things that I want to do in a few minutes, but I do, I have an order in mind here. Because this is complicated material, I think I want to stay with the order. There is a place where in, here in this reading where Rinpoche lays out very quickly, but you know, very precisely, I think, what it means to construct a temporal order, which is another way of talking about that, is what it means to conduct time in the way that we ordinarily conduct time. It's right at the point, well, let's see, it's the second full paragraph on 126. Rinpoche says, okay, now we really want to investigate this. What are the mechanics of this conducting? And he's doing that in the context of saying, there's something that doesn't make sense in terms of our usual logic, because we're conducting. But how can you conduct when you have to first conduct? You know, so that's the problem in a sense. He says, let's lay that out. He says, start with time itself. And notice this is actually where he makes this transition. It seems like a very conscious transition, which is he says, just to investigate this question, Let us start with time as a conducted construct. So we conduct time, and time itself is a construct. And again, there's still a paradox there, because it seems as though you need to have time in order to construct anything. But he's saying, no, we also construct time. And he says the way we construct it is in terms of subjective and objective realms. Sudi makes a comment here that the whole discussion here is profound and clear, and I agree that it is, but we need to be careful with it. We want to make sure we go through it. So when you conduct time in the usual way, you are constructing a realm, a temporal order, which orders events in terms of subject and object. That's basically what he's saying here. Right? So you've got this order, or maybe there's not just one order, and you are relating everything that shows up to that order. And he says all temporal phenomena are linked in sharing this relationship. And one of the aspects of that order, because what he's really trying to lay out here is how we construct time. Right? And he says one of the aspects of the order that we construct or conduct, kind of leaving both of them open right now, is that time unfolds from past to present to future, which we have talked about and everybody knows, but also time is cyclical. So we have the seasons and day and night and the rhythms of daily life. And everybody, again, pretty much knows about that. He makes the point here that there's a kind of an inherent contradiction built into that. Maybe not contradiction, but there are these two ways of in the temporal order, time seems to show up actually in three ways. One is as temporal, past, present, future. One is as cyclical. There's a return, day and night, and seasons, and those are the examples we always use, so I'm not going to try to think of another one right now. And then the third thing about time in the temporal order that we conduct is that we measure it, right? And that's what he talks about at page 127. He says, for the most part, the changes that we find in time can be measured out. And time itself is measured out, and it's because time is measured out that we can measure the world that we inhabit, that is subject to this temporal order. So this is the discussion that he goes into here, and he links human consciousness to it. And this goes back to the point that I was trying to make at the beginning, which is that the temporal order that we experience and which has its linearity and its cyclical nature and its measurement, the quality of being measurable, that also has to do with the way our mind works. Has to do with, it's a little vague, so let me try to be more precise. We think about things in terms of objects that appear in time and events that unfold in time, and our consciousness works accordingly. Right? We interpret in terms of the world that time gives us, and the time that we experience is exactly the way that we interpret, because the conducting and the interpreting and the manifesting of objects and the unfolding of events, those are all completely interrelated with one another. So it's not that we know a world that unfolds in a particular way, but that our knowing is more basic than that. No, our particular way of knowing, our consciousness, is completely connected to the way that the temporal order unfolds. You know, the mind that gives us an understanding of time is given by time. So there's always this going around in circles. It's always, and I don't mean to make that sound very negative, it's just that everything is interconnected in that way. Right? So he says, let's take a look at the second paragraph on page 127. In this measured out temporal order, clearly defined entities influence one another according to the principles of cause and effect, and there are sharp transitions from one state to the next. At the same time, everything that appears is interdependent or conditional, and our interpretations are aimed at reconciling those two facts, the world of transitions and conditions and the structure of identity and sameness. And you could actually say, this isn't quite said in the text, that consciousness, the kind of consciousness that we manifest, that we know about, that is our consciousness, is exactly the ongoing reconciliation of change and sameness. You know? Our interpretation is necessary for the whole thing to balance out. It's this very beautifully constructed, conducted, intricate kind of machine, but machine isn't strong enough. You know, it's more like an organism. Everything plays into everything else. And so there are no possibilities that can't play into that. That's the issue, right? And that's why he says at the bottom of 127, and we already looked into this or mentioned it, he says, the knowledge, you know, part of the whole structure, part of the organic whole, is a particular way of knowing, and so that way of knowing can't take us beyond or can't take us outside. But that's not because knowing itself is limited. It's because we're only exercising this one way of knowing, right? This limitation is not inherent in knowledge itself. in principle, once the temporal order is identified as a construct, and that's the key move, once you see that the conducting is a conducting or the constructed is a constructing, now different possibilities open up and can in principle be differently constructed. So this is the place in the reading for today where Rinpoche introduces the notion of inward time. And so that's what I want to go back to and have us practice with a little bit. Sudhi says here, I never before understood this measured out, that via this dimension, we are no longer completely present in the flow of time. Yes, I will let that stand. I think that's right. Okay. So he says, once we understand that it's a construct, the very bottom of 127, then in principle we could construct it differently. And then he gives an example. Now he doesn't say, no, now we're going to see what's really going on. That would kind of go against the whole thrust of what's being said here, because we're not talking about something that's more real than this. But he's saying other realities are possible. And he says, for instance, just to give one example, right? And then over to page 128, we might be able to discern beneath the shifting patterns of temporality, excuse me, an inward dimension of time, an unchanging continuum. Now that's something we'd have to explore, but right now I just want to focus on the inward dimension, which is available behind the shifting scenery of the temporal order. And then he says, well, you know, that's a possibility, but we don't necessarily know how to get there, because in order to get there, or in order to explore that possibility, we would have to activate a different way of knowing, right? One that does not trace its lineage to the presupposed constructs of the temporal order. So what would be the nature of that way of knowing? It wouldn't be based on cause and effect, right? And it wouldn't be based on identity, and it wouldn't be based on sharp and clearly defined transitions. But it also, in some sense, wouldn't be based on the way in which one event succeeds another. It might well be based on the aliveness, the dynamic of time. He doesn't say that here, but in terms of what we've explored over these months, it seems like that would be a good place to look. But the place that Rinpoche suggests we could look here is toward an inward dimension that's available behind the shifting scenery of the temporal order. So there's a place I want to point us to that we looked at actually in the last program, where he says just a little bit more about that. I'm sure there are other places, but this is the one that I went to. It's on page 112, in the second full paragraph. He's talking about the usual structures. The usual structures have to do with from and to and linear temporality. And he says we don't know how to do it differently. And that's exactly the point that he's been making here as well. We don't know, because the kind of knowing that's available to us is a knowing that depends on this temporal order. Okay. So he says, within this not knowing, that is, we don't know what to do, within this not knowing, we have a choice. Why feel compelled to go anywhere at all? Within the present immediate arising, we are free to turn inward. In the immediacy of presence, a single thought, a single connection, a single unexpected phrase or turn of inquiry may reveal a new knowledge and a different timing. So I'd like us to practice with this. This is related to the kinds of practice we've been doing over the last couple of weeks. And in this whole program, the way that we've been practicing, and I deliberately haven't gone to the exercises, which sometimes can be helpful in giving us a more of a structure. This is an unstructured kind of practice, but the key to it is to stay within the immediate arising. So, you know, we've looked in the past at a number of different ways to do that, the aliveness of the immediate arising. But let's just go to this description that I just read on page 112. Within the present immediate arising, we are free to turn inward. In the immediacy of presence, a single thought, a single connection, a single unexpected phrase or turn of inquiry may reveal a new knowledge and a different timing. So the thing that is added here that we haven't really tried to look at before is looking for a new kind of knowledge. So there's the inward immediate arising, and the aliveness of it. And if you say, well, how can I look for a different kind of knowledge? You know, I don't know how to do that. Yes, of course you don't know how to do it. That's fine. But still, the possibility is there. And I think one place we can look is something we looked at last week, and I think I mentioned in the orientation too, is the idea of multiple variations. You know, in the immediate arising, there is the way that we ordinarily understand what is arising. And we don't have to try to go anywhere else, but within that ordinariness, there is also the possibility of more. And that's what I think multiple variations points towards. And this is what we looked at last week, actually. Rinpoche says in the reading from last week, he talks about thoughts that can't be thought, experience that can't be experienced. We have to understand the can't there in a particular way. According to the usual temporal order, those things can't happen. But if we go to the immediate arising and we allow for the possibility of multiple variations or multiple dimensionality, as another way Rinpoche's talked about it, then a different possibility is there. You know, on page 128, Rinpoche says, let's take a look at it for a moment. Right after the heading, he says, in the forms of understanding linked to linear time, constructs and cognitions transmitted through thoughts and the senses interact in multiple layers. And then he says, we extract from this display the definitions, qualities, and values we require to make our experience meaningful. So first there are these multiple variations, or here he says multiple layers interacting, and what we do is extract one possibility. And we'd like to go to the point before we do that extracting operation, before we do that naming and identifying. But we don't do it, of course, by going before to some previous moment in time. It's within the inward immediate arising. That's where we look. That's plenty of discussion. Let's do it. I'm going to just point to the fact that Michael has written something here. He says, Thor Heyerdahl, after months on a tiny balsa wood raft, this is a fellow who tried sailing across part of the Pacific, rows out and looks back at the raft bobbing on the face of the sea, seeing the tiny floating bit of wood in the great ocean gleaming and sparkling. They all started laughing helplessly. And he says, is that like stepping out of the construct in which we pass our lives? Yes, I think that's a very nice image. You know, if we begin to realize how we've extracted from the range of all possibilities, just this one possibility, that's our temporal order. We don't have to go somewhere else. We don't have to build a new raft, to use that image. But suddenly there's a real freedom. Okay, inward immediate arising, aliveness, multiple variations, multiple dimensions. Let's leave it at that and try to practice for a couple of minutes and then see what people find in that. And Sudhi, I see you wrote something, but let's do the practice now. Okay, just a couple of minutes. Okay, so let's come together. I'm going to start off by making a point here because it really struck me in these couple of minutes, and I think it's very important, and that is, you set out to do a practice like this. You say, okay, inward turning, inward immediate arising. There's a natural tendency to say, okay, now I know what I have to do, and I'm going to do it. And when you do that, you are excluding yourself, right? You're saying, I'm the one who's doing this practice. Now, how do I go about doing it? And you've already marked out one area that is not involved in the practice, and that is the one who's doing the practice. And the moment you've done that, it becomes, maybe this is too strong, but I don't think so, it becomes impossible. The reason it becomes impossible is because everything is interrelated. You can't take a part of the temporal order or the order that we've conducted and hold it out. If you do, you're bringing the whole thing back in, even while you're pretending that you're not. So, enough words. I'm going to give you all a chance to say something. In the meantime, I'll look at what Sudhi said before we did the practice, but she said she'd started to do it, and she did it looking at the white noise always present in my inner ears. And then the new dimension opens up. Yeah, you look. Maybe one place to look is all the places that we ordinarily ignore, and all the places that we think of as not worth noticing, not worth being aware of. Okay. So who else would like to say something or write something? David, okay. I was reading an article, this is David, I was reading an article by Caroline. Caroline's written something about TSK that she wants to submit to a magazine in England in connection with a program we want to do in England next year. And she used the metaphor concertinaed clock time. She had a specific meaning in mind that I did not know. I found myself exploring different meanings for the metaphor, conducting different possible stories or narratives. Is this something like what you were asking? Well, you know, there's always two different levels in TSK, two different levels of inquiry. So, you know, we are conducting an inquiry here. One level is to say, well, let's call the usual temporal order, the usual definitions, the usual ways of engaging experience, everything that would be included in the word usual. Let's call all that into question and see how could we be doing it differently. And I think that's related to what you're saying here, David, which is different meanings for the metaphor, conducting different possible stories or narratives. That's one level. And you know, if we were talking in terms of the three levels of time, space, and knowledge, which figure so prominently, especially in the first book, I would say that is second level inquiry, you know, whether you're focused on knowledge or time or space. But there is a third level, and I think we're actually, or there's a different level. I think it's right to say that it's the third level. And I think what we're looking at here is more directed at that, and that has to do with recognizing the conducting as conducting or the constructing as constructing. And not going anywhere else, not exploring different alternatives, but simply within what's happening, there are new possibilities. So the two can kind of blend into each other as I think about it, because, for instance, the way Trudy was saying, well, she focused on the white noise in her ear that's always present for her, and that brought about, let me go back up to her quote, that brought about a new dimension in addition to the normal one. So that's kind of a blend, you could say, of what I've just called the second level and the third level. But I think that what we're looking at here is, you know, when you say multiple levels or multiple variations, to go to that level before something has solidified out is also to go to a level before some new possibility solidifies out, although that may be the way into it. I hope that's clear. So Brigitte wrote, only very slightly I tried to relax and not immediately identify everything, object, space, time, then a tender, sweet pain was arising in my heart area. Yeah, sometimes I think that if you go to this area, this level of multiple variations, or the level before things get named out and set up, it stands to reason that what you experience then is not something that's easy to name. So, you know, tender, sweet pain is that's a naming, but it's a naming that leaves things very open. And I think that probably where we go is going to be a very open, unnamed place. Michael says, constructs feel like an organization in space, conducting an activity in time. That's good, and that's related. We talked about that a little, so I'll say something more about that, and then we should stop. If we can question the spatial organization, notably that of a self in opposition to a world, yes, and that's what Rinpoche writes about here and what I said immediately after the exercise. If we can question the spatial organization, I think you meant to say, it can draw attention to the unnecessary construct of linear time. Then a wider knowledge follows in a natural way from this freeing of awareness from the familiar. Okay, good. There's, you know, we shouldn't expect necessarily something in particular to arise, but freeing ourselves from the familiar, I think that's exactly what we're looking for here. So let me just say one more thing about, something about the constructing. First of all, Rinpoche says that the two are, you know, constructing and conducting are two ways of looking, and they don't really, you can't really reconcile them. Let's see if I can find that here. Well, maybe not, but you know, at the very bottom of 129, he talks about the interplay at every stage of mental conducting and constructing. And so you find something that doesn't depend on the fact that it has a particular identity. I suppose what I wanted to say about it, I don't know, maybe we've already covered it. Constructing is a metaphor that points us toward how we ordinarily set things up. And that's why, the phrase that he uses here is constructing the bridge of time. Right? There's a conducting that constructs. Not all conducting has to construct necessarily. But when you construct time, it becomes a bridge into a particular temporal order, a particular reality. And so, yes, the word constructing automatically points us more towards something that has been set up and is more rigid and so Michael said here, you can see it as unnecessary. And I think that's right. I think that's fair to say. It's a particular kind of conducting. I suppose I would say that conducting is more fundamental because in conducting we don't necessarily construct anything. I already said that. That's more or less said in the first full paragraph on page 130, in the third sentence, the indeterminate interplay of mental constructs. So that, you know, there's so many words in this reading and in general in TSK that try to leave things open. There's the indeterminate interplay. There's multiple and variable and what's unformed. We always want to be looking for those possibilities. So the indeterminate interplay of mental constructs with the temporal order presents in a different form the ongoing openness of the future. Remember that? We talked about that more in the last program, I guess you could say. The ongoing openness of the future. It demonstrates that no structure is predetermined, right? And no order absolute. Time itself is seen as part of the conducted. So we construct a particular understanding of time, but that is a part of the conducted. Okay, I'm not sure that's been well enough. I don't feel that so good about having brought that to a nice close, but maybe that's okay. Maybe I can take refuge in the indeterminate the indeterminate interplay. That's in the middle of what we're going through. So, okay, we'll stop here. I'm sorry I kept you a little late today. And we'll meet again next week. Goodbye.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.